Jake Halpern, in his book Fame Junkies, talks about how attached we all are to our American celebrity culture. Sort of like in the old days, there was the TV show Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. You know, it was very influential. We thought, wow, we had no idea people lived like that. And so people are really quite taken with celebrities. And there's a job in this world called a personal assistant to celebrities. And people would like to have a job like that. You will be the right-hand man or woman to the celebrity that you're serving. And so Jake Halpern in Fame Junkies talks about people really liking this job. He says, most celebrity personal assistants describe their work as drudgery, doing laundry, fetching groceries, paying bills, and being on call at all hours to spoil celebrities who often treated them like servants. On top of that, assistants are not paid particularly well. The average salary of a celebrity personal assistant is $56,000 a year. Not all that much money by Hollywood standards, especially given the round-the-clock obligations that many of them have. He says the appeal of the job is simply being up close with a famous person. And so a lot of people would really like to have a job, be walking hand in hand with a celebrity on a daily basis. And that's what a personal assistant does. Well, today we're talking about a Christian work ethic. And you're going to see that this idea has a lot to do with who we serve. And ultimately, we serve the Lord. And this comes out really well in this passage in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 5. It says, servants, be obedient to them who are your masters according to the flesh. Now, just pause there. We estimate that something like one-third of all the people who lived in the Roman Empire at the time when this was written, one-third of all the people were servants. And sometimes people say, well, let's try to make a distinction between like servant and slave. But no, you can't really do that. These servants could be really badly treated. And so as people were coming to know the Lord in the early centuries of the church, some of these people were servants and some of these people were masters. And in the Roman Empire, we have historical documents. For example, this one servant dropped a crystal vase and so they killed him for it. Like, you dropped that vase, you know. Away with your head, you know. That's all. That you can't do that. You could do whatever you wanted. Aristotle, whom everybody loves, right? Aristotle said, "Well, a servant is basically a tool, and you can treat him like a tool." And Aristotle, you know, was a smart guy, but that's what it was like to be a servant. And so many Christians are coming to know the Lord in the servant class, because one-third of all the Roman Empire was in the servant class. And some of these Christians have come to know the Lord, and they are in the master class. Now, we don't have servants and masters anymore, but we realize that all of these things apply very nicely to employer-employee relationships. So that's how we're taking this today. So we say servants, it would be like employees or workers. Be obedient to those who are your leaders, your supervisors, your foremen, whatever, your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart as unto Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will, doing services to the Lord and not to men. Knowing that whatever good thing any man does, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he is bond or free. And you masters, do the same things unto them, giving up the threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven and there's no respect of persons with him. All right, so that's our text. And there are lots of huge ideas here that really affect your attitude about work. So we're going to unpack some of these ideas and two really big points. The first one, and I would say that both of these points are kind of surprising. I doubt that many people, when they're first introduced to Christianity, would have imagined that these things are true. So here's surprise number one. Doing a good job, even if it's drudgery, doing a good job at drudgery, like slaving, doing a good job, even if it's drudgery, is important to God and therefore important to us as Christians. That's a surprise. You would think that the comparatively high status and high salary jobs are more important to the Lord than low status, low salary jobs. But that's not true. Even drudgery is important to the Lord. Who would think? Surprise number two, abusive employment is blind to the Lord's mastery. So when an employer neglects or abuses, takes advantage of his employees, that proves that he's blind to the Lord's mastery, even if he would self-identify as a Christian. All right, so these are surprises. Really, it makes a difference if I treat my employees well or not well. And yes, it makes a huge difference because the Lord is the master. All right, so here's our first point. Doing a good job. This is such a surprise. Doing a good job, even at slaving, even at drudgery, doing a good job is important to God. Now, I'm giving you two passages side by side here because Ephesians and Colossians are the twin epistles. They say almost the same things. And I want you to see the verbiage in both cases, both for emphasis and where there is a little difference. I want you to see that as well. So on the Ephesians side, we read, "Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh." According to the flesh means as far as fleshly things are concerned. They're never truly, absolutely your master, right? But just as far as, you know, your life in this world is concerned. So servants, be obedient to them who are your masters as far as this life is concerned. And be obedient with fear and trembling in singleness of your heart as under Christ, not with eye service, not only when you're being watched, like, oh, he's looking at me, look how busy I am. Not only with eye service, but even when you're not being watched. And not as men pleasers, not just because a human being is watching you, but because God is watching you. That's the idea. On the Colossians side, you have almost exactly the same verbiage. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, as far as this life is concerned, fearing God in singleness of heart, not with eye service as man pleasers. So almost the same. And you see, this is cutting to the core of good work. See, it says singleness of heart in both cases. In singleness of heart, that is, I'm not divided, I'm not distracted. There's not part of me that wants to do a good job and part of me that wants to do a bad job. I have a single heart in this. I want to do a good job. It is my mission in singleness of heart. And then we've talked about eye service. In both cases, I'm not just doing this because somebody is watching me. I'm doing it even if nobody watches me. And I'm not just doing this to please people. I'm doing this for a bigger reason, that I'm trying to please God. So when I fix your car, I'm not just doing this in a way that would get me by if you don't know exactly what I'm doing. I'm doing this in a way that would please God, who is always watching me. That's the idea. And then the second idea like that, Ephesians 6, 5-7, as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart with goodwill. And on the Colossians side, do it heartily. Do it with your heart, from a good heart, with goodwill. So when I fix your plumbing, I want it to be a good job, even though you're not going to go under the crawl space and see what I did. I want this to be something good, because God is always watching. And I want you to know I'm doing this with goodwill. I want this to work for you. I want this to be good for you. I'm doing this with goodwill. I'm doing it with my heart, not just outwardly, like I'm going to get by on this, but I really do want this to be good work. So you see, that's a good job, even if we're talking about drudgery. If we were talking about doing the laundry and the ironing and washing the windows, things that people don't want to do, we still want it to be a good job because we're doing it with a good heart. I used to be a window washer, some of you know, when Therese and I were newly married. And there was this lady who lived in a really, really nice house with lots of really, really nice windows in Paradise Valley, Arizona. And I washed her windows every single week because she loved her windows. And they were all open, you know, to that beautiful Arizona sunshine. And so I washed her windows every week. And you can imagine, there were many times I'd go up to a window, say, on the inside space of a bedroom that wasn't used during the week, and I'd wash it again. It's like, I don't even know if I could get this window better than it is from last week, but it makes no difference. She wants windows, and she's going to get windows that are sparkly clean. And I worked at a restaurant, and many times it was the same thing. We went there every week, and sometimes the only thing that was bad is flies, because it was an indoor-outdoor restaurant, And instead of squashing flies, they had fly spray. And that fly spray is oily. So there'd be a fly on these windows, like floor-to-ceiling windows. And they'd take the spray and go, it's like, oh, that is so hard to get off. But anyway, you don't squash flies that way. But except for that, I mean, going every week and washing the windows, they're not dirty from 1 week. But, you know, they pay me to come in here and wash these windows. And even the ones that don't have fly spray on them, I'm going to wash them. And the guy who owned the restaurant, he said, I just want you to know that all the time, people walk right into our glass doors. They don't know that there's glass there. He said, so I think you're doing a good job, and that's what I want to hear. I'm doing a good job. But it's with goodwill. Like, you like these windows to shine? Well, I'm going to give you some shiny windows. And even though I don't even know if I can improve on it from the way it looks right now, I'm going to wet it down again and squeeze it again, and hopefully I get it just right. And that's wanting to please the person who hired you. And that's the way it's supposed to be, doing a good job, because that's important to God. Now, everybody has to work, right? The Christian work ethic says that we are all going to be workers, and we're all going to be really good workers as we have the ability. So Genesis 3:17, God said to Adam, the ground is cursed. In sorrow you shall eat from it all the days of your life. In the sweat of your face you'll eat bread. So not only do you have to work pretty hard. Everybody has to work hard. And by the way, if the day ever comes when you're so financially independent that you don't have to work hard to get your bread, then you still have to work hard because you're a Christian. And all of God's people work hard. You might not work hard for money. You'll work hard to take care of people. And that's even better than working for money, right? But all of God's people work hard. In 2 Thessalonians 3:10, Paul says, even when we were with you, this we commanded that if any would not work, neither should he eat. Say, I don't want to work hard. I don't want to get my bread by the sweat of my face. All right, do you want to eat? Because if you like to eat, that means you like to work. And don't think that those aren't connected. They must be connected. That's the Christian work ethic. All of God's people work hard. And there's no such thing as a Christian, truly Christian slacker. All of God's people work hard. 1 Timothy 5:8. But if any man provide not for his own house, especially for those particularly those of his own house, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. You have to provide for the people that you love, your family, your wife, your children, your parents, if they're too old to work. You have to take care of everybody around you. You have to take care of your family. And Romans chapter 12, verse 11, the prayer of Paul is that we would not be lazy in business. We wouldn't be lazy in business. We'd be fervent. We have zest in our business. We work really hard, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. And so all of God's people are busy. All of God's people work as hard as they can. R.G. Letourneau was a multimillionaire back in the day, even during the Depression. And he said, if you don't work hard, that proves that you don't love the Lord. All of God's people work and work hard. So work is not an option. The tricky thing is being in a drudge job and thinking of it as important. And by the way, most of us Americans are in drudge jobs, and most people around the world. Most jobs are not so glamorous. So I'm reminding you here that these are the 15 most common occupations in our country right now. What are most jobs? Well, most jobs are these: retail salespeople, cashiers, office clerks, food service workers, waiters and waitresses, customer service representatives, material movers, janitors, stock clerks and order fillers, secretaries, bookkeepers and accountants, and vehicle drivers. Nursing is the fifth most popular job, and that one has some glamour. General managers is the 13th most popular job, and that one has some glamour. I mean, who wouldn't like to say, yeah, I'm the manager. You know, it's great. And then 15th most common job is school teaching, elementary school level. And that one has some glamour. Unless you talk to the teachers and they say it's pretty hard. But for the rest of us, like, oh, you know, you're a teacher. You're a teacher of people. That's great. But except for those three, most of these don't have a lot of glamour. They are drudge jobs. So when you're a little kid, nobody thinks, I can't wait till I grow up and I am going to be a stock clerk. I'm going to pack UPS boxes. That'll be so great. Nobody ever says that. But that's what most of us do. All right, so most jobs revolve around selling your assistance, food item, or widget. Hi, my name is Dave. I'm with Accent Window Washers, where the accent is on quality and service. I wonder if I could come by and give you an estimate on these mighty big windows you have overlooking the golf course. Yes, I can. Well, thank you very much. Here's my estimate, and it's way too low, but they want me to be their window washer, and I'm in good shape then. I'm selling my services. So you're selling your assistance. You're selling a food item. Would you like to have 10 boxes of Twinkies or 100? Put me down for 100. You're selling assistance, you're selling food items, or you're selling widgets. Now, this little guy right here will zap the mosquitoes right out of the tree. You're selling. And that's not so glamorous. It's just, you know, I'm going to wash your windows, I'm going to make you a Twinkie, or I'm going to zap your mosquitoes. Or you might be tracking the sales. Honey, how do we do with window washing? Great. Red letter month. We earned $200 this month. Outstanding. We're tracking our sales, our food items, our widgets, or we're delivering. Uh-oh, the truck is seizing up because Arizona is hot, and I didn't check that radiator, and it's overheating, but I just have to get to this job. And we cracked the block. Uh-oh. All right, well, we're delivering the window washer to your door so you have sparkly, clean windows. Or you're delivering food, that's the Twinkie hostess truck, or you're delivering widgets, that's what most of us are doing. These tasks are not glamorous. You can't say my career defines my life. Even if you have a glamorous task, if you're an astronaut, God bless you, that's really, really something, and I am very envious of you, but even you can't let that define your life, because your value in your work is not defined by the glamour, the social status, the skill level, the salary level. That's not what makes this wonderful. The calling value of your job is in three things. First, you are supposed to provide for your own food, and everybody has to do that. Second, you're supposed to interact with the people in the marketplace. When I go and wash your windows, I'll talk to you. Hey, how are you doing? Fine, how are you doing? And I hope that I've been a blessing. Each person's ability to create something pleasant. Like, I'll make your windows so clean that your customers will walk right into them. And that's kind of cool. When I did the Hardee's restaurant, because everything there is greasy, you know, greasy hamburgers and french fries everywhere. And I came there and they called me Squeaky. We talked in Sunday school about nicknames. Because the squeegee constantly squeaks, and particularly because I had to use a lot of soap because it's, you know, such a greasy environment. So you go, squeak, squeak, squeak. And then, hey, Squeaky, how you doing? Good to see you. You make these windows great. So what we're doing is we're interacting. And you have a relationship. And that's important. Those relationships are good things. These are the things that give you a sense of satisfaction. And the biggest thing of all, which is under all of this, the foundation to all three of those, providing for my own needs and the needs of my family, interacting with people in the marketplace and creating something beautiful. Behind all of that is this really, really big idea, the divine aspect of it. And you see it everywhere in this text, right? So it says we're going to work hard, servants, obey your masters, employees, please your bosses, as unto Christ. As if you were washing windows for Jesus. As if you were doing plumbing for Jesus. As if you were making hostess Twinkies for Jesus. Do your very best. Do it as unto Christ. As the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. I want to do a good job. My heart is in this. As to the Lord and not to men. Technically, I didn't just make those Twinkies for people. I made them for the Lord. It's something beautiful. And I think that the Lord will be happy that I did a good job. I kept everything really clean, and I made it just right. And I think the Lord will be happy with my good job. If he was going to have a Twinkie, he'd like to have this one that I just made. And, of course, he would like a Twinkie because that's okay, right? We don't have to wonder if there's liberty in Christ to have junk food now and again. Colossians 3:22, which is like the Ephesians passage, fearing God. Like, yeah, I really want, if I was making a pastry for Jesus, I'd want it to be really, I'd be nervous about making it really good. And so that's how I'm going to make my pastry tomorrow when I go to work. As to the Lord and not to men. You see, over and over again, this is the idea in Scripture. It's the divine aspect. We weren't just plumbers for this fellow. We were plumbers for Jesus. We weren't just ironing clothes for this person. We were ironing clothes for Jesus. And believe it or not, I mean, that makes this divine angle appropriate for whatever your job is, even if it's drudge. Isn't that just crazy? Doesn't that surprise you? I think that's so surprising. So remember, we were talking about celebrity assistants. Jake Halpern, author of the book, right? Fame Junkies. He went to this meeting of the Association of Celebrity Personal Assistants. There's a club, you know, and if you're a celebrity personal assistant, you can be in this club, and they have training. And so he heard about this meeting, and he says, during one of the addresses, the trainer is addressing the trainees, and she says, if you are a celebrity personal assistant and you find yourself sick, guess what? You're still going to be working, because it's not the kind of situation where your employer is going to be able to just have his life stop for a day because you're sick. So you want to please this celebrity, you want to be a personal assistant to a celebrity, and you don't feel so good? Tough. You can't ask a celebrity to stop what he's doing just because you don't feel so good. Get up and do what they want you to do. Same with the Lord. You're serving the greatest celebrity in the world, the Lord Jesus. And you have to work hard. Jake Halpern says the essence of her speech was this. You need to be available to serve your celebrity's every need. And above all, you must banish the word no from your professional vocabulary. So everything we do, we're doing for the Lord. Besides being a plumber at this particular house, or fixing this particular person's car, or doing whatever it is that you do, you're doing it for the Lord. And you have to do it well. And don't tell the Lord no, just do a great job all the time. That's what it means to be the Lord's personal assistant. And you are. Again, Halpern, doing his research, he surveyed 653 middle school girls. And he said, girls, if you were given a choice of becoming the CEO of a major corporation, or the president of Yale or Harvard, or a Navy SEAL, or a United States Senator, or the personal assistant to a famous singer or movie star, 43% of the girls chose to be a personal assistant to a celebrity. It's because you want to be with the celebrity. It's the nearness, the proximity to the famous person that makes it exciting. Say, well, if you're going to be my personal assistant, you're going to be doing my ironing. Good. I'll do your ironing. Well, I thought ironing was a demeaning job. I thought ironing was a drudge. Well, not if I do it for you. Now you see the connection, right? Jesus says, I want you to iron this as if you were ironing it for me. And normally you think of ironing as a drudge. But not if you're doing it for Jesus. And the point here is that you are doing it for Jesus. That's why we do what we do. The real importance of any job is the divine angle. So chapter 6, verse 8 of Ephesians. Knowing that whatever good thing any man does, the same shall he receive of the Lord. Really? So if I wash your windows well, if I fix your car right, if I iron your clothes right, if I make you a really good pastry, then I am rewarded by God? And that is exactly what that is saying. And remember, to whom it is addressing? Servants. When you all do this, you're going to be rewarded for it if you do it with your heart, as if you're doing it for the Lord. Like, really? And the answer is yes, really. Colossians chapter 3, verse 24, right? Because the twin epistles say almost the same thing. In the book of Colossians, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. So you're telling servants that they're going to have an inheritance. Servants don't get inheritances. Sons get inheritances. Well, from our celebrity king, Jesus, he gives us inheritances for doing a good job at ironing, at drudgery. Knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve ultimately the Lord Christ and not just that human guy. And verse 25 flips it around and makes it kind of scary. Verse 25 says, but he that does wrong shall receive for the wrong which he has done. So not only are you rewarded if you do a good job in the service for Jesus, but if you're under that car and you say, actually, this car does not need a new control arm, but I'm going to stick it to the customer and tell him that it does need a control arm, then you're going to receive for the wrong that you've done. Both ways. Like, yikes. So the whole thing is about your service to the Lord. The importance of any job is not whether it's ironing or astronauting. It's who you're doing it for. You're doing it for the greatest king in the universe. That's the divine aspect. You have the ability to provide creature comforts for yourself and loved ones so you don't have to live off the largesse of others. Like, no, I don't need you to give me your food. I don't need you to pay my rent. I got this. I have a job. I work hard by the sweat of my brow, right? So you have the ability to provide creature comforts for yourself and your loved ones without burdening other people. And you have the ability to make beauty out of chaos. Those windows are filthy. I got you. I'll fix it. And you have the ability to reach out in kindness to all people in the marketplace. Everybody you meet, all of your customers, all of your coworkers, as you reach out to them, you touch their lives. That's what you have the ability to do as a worker. And this applies to bosses too. So in our text, Ephesians 6:9, and you masters, you guys who are supervisors, bosses, CEOs, you masters, your master also is in heaven. Neither is there respect of persons with him. Again from Colossians chapter 4, verse 1. Masters, you also have a master in heaven. So it's not really any different between the guy who is the subordinate and the guy who is the superior at any job. Because we all have one celebrity personal master that we assist. All of us, whether we be masters or servants. In chapter 6, verse 9, so bosses, do the same things unto them. Everything we talked about with the servants, everything we talked about with the followers, the subordinates, you have the same responsibilities. Be obedient to your heavenly master with fear and trembling and singleness of heart. Are you a master? You should be kind of afraid. You should be careful to do a good job for your master. In verse 6, doing the will of God from the heart. Have a heart for this now. With goodwill, doing service. I have goodwill toward the people who work under me. I earnestly wish them well. I want them to have a happy life. In verse 8, knowing that whatever good thing any man does, the same shall he receive of the Lord. You have the same idea as the person who's the subordinate. In verse 9 again, do the same things unto them, comma, and then this, forbearing threatening or laying off the threats. Do not be threatening the people under you. You don't want the people under you to feel like every minute something bad is going to happen to me if I upset you. You don't want people to think that. Lay off the threats. You don't want to stress them out. So you bosses, you do the same things. Do you want the Lord to stress you out? Do you want the Lord to be looking over your shoulder so if you ever do anything wrong, he yells at you and docks your pay and takes away some benefit? You don't want your master to treat you that way, so you shouldn't treat the people who are subordinate to you that way. So do the same things unto them and lay off the threatening. In Colossians, this is really startling. Give to your servants that which is just. Just just means righteous. Whatever is right. So give your servants what's right. And the most amazing thing, give unto your servants that which is right and equal. And this is where the Christians get that idea of all men are created equal. So even though you might have a different rank and a different salary, you look at that fellow who is your subordinate. You look at that fellow who is your follower. And you think, I am no better than he is. He is not below me in God's cosmic way of thinking. This person is equal in importance to God with me. He is created equal. So yeah, I have a better rank. I have a bigger office. I have a bigger salary. But I don't mess with that guy because he and I, we're the same in God's eyes. And that's quite a thing to imagine. So you can imagine again, if you lived in an atmosphere of first century Roman Christianity. And you're looking at your servant and thinking, I'll tell you what's kind of bad about this thing, is I could sell my servant to the guy in a different city, but his wife and children wouldn't go with him. They would stay with me. I'd be splitting up this family. Now, would I like somebody to split up my family? I wouldn't like that at all. So I better not split up his family. As a matter of fact, I better treat him really, really well. And now you see you're striking at the heart of what made American history of slavery so awful. Like, really, you call yourself a Christian plantation owner and you're going to split up this family? How dare you? Would you like your family be split up? Does God split your family up, or what he joins together, nobody would ever separate? So how in the world could you entertain the possibility of splitting up this family? Now, if you were caught in a system you inherited, slaves from your father and grandfather, and you can no longer afford to keep them, then you still do everything you can to take care of them, because that's the way your master treats you, and you have a master in heaven, and you better treat that person that way. And you know what's going to happen when all of this works out? You're going to think, you know what, I really think the very best thing of all is that none of us have any slaves, period. And of course, that's what eventually happened in the Christian church. Abusive employment. We just have to say a word about this because this is important too. Particularly because it's one of those quirky things of the Christian life. We call it redemption and lift. And as you follow Jesus and you have this Protestant Christian work ethic and this idea of, I'm going to serve you with goodwill. I mean, I really want to do a good job for you as my customer. I really do. Well, what happens then is you get promoted. People say, well, then I want you to work on my car. I want you to do my plumbing if that's how you feel about it. And so you get promoted and you get asked to come up higher, and then you become somebody's boss because you've been promoted. So it's bound to happen if you follow Jesus in the current cultural climate. You might just get noticed and get promoted. Well, once you are somebody's boss, well, you have some special responsibilities. So again, chapter 6, verse 9, Ephesians. And you masters do the same things unto them, giving up the threatening, laying off the threatening, forbearing threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, and there's no respect of persons with him. He doesn't think of your education as being any different than this fellow who has no education. You say, well, I have very good grammar and diction. The Lord doesn't care anything at all about your grammar and diction, except as you have tried to express yourself well for his benefit, right? Because as I want to iron the Lord's shirt well, I also want to write this letter well that I'm writing to my customers. But except for that, it makes no difference who has more education or less education. It only matters that in God's eyes, this is a valuable person and this is a valuable person. And as far as their relationship in this world, it makes no difference. From Colossians chapter 4, verse 1, the same thing. Masters, give to your servants that which is just and equal, what is right, and we are created equal, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. So the whole thing is about the Lord's mastery. And if you think masters are supposed to treat their subordinates badly, then you would also have to think that God is supposed to treat you badly, because he's your master, but you don't want God to treat you badly. So now you know how you have to treat those who follow you. Milton Hershey, you know, Hershey bar. He became very, very wealthy before the Great Depression. Very, very wealthy. Before he came along, most people had to hand make chocolates, and he applied mass production ideas to making chocolate, and so he became, you know, like the chocolate king. He made scads of money, but he really loved his employees. When the stock market crashed in 1929, a lot of companies just started laying off people. But Hershey loved his employees. And so he began to do new construction programs around Hershey, Pennsylvania. And just to keep his people working, because there weren't enough orders for chocolate. Okay, he said, well, I don't want these guys just to go away. I love these guys. So the guys who were making chocolate before, they're now going to build a new high school. And he was going to have them build a hotel, a pretty swanky hotel with 170 rooms and a community center and a sports arena. And it had no profit. Hershey is spending his money to build these things because he doesn't want his guys to have no work and no paycheck. And in one of these construction projects, there's a story about the foreman who was digging, and he used earth-moving equipment, a steam shovel, and he was showing Hershey. He said, "Look at the steam shovel I brought in. It does the work of 40 people." And Hershey said, "Get rid of it and hire 40 people. We don't want them to do without jobs." So sometimes Christians say, you know, "I'm all about capitalism. I'm all about capitalism." And, you know, I am too. That's very Bible, but not cruel capitalism. Not cold capitalism, like Hershey capitalism. You love these people and you take care of them. And they become important to you because you don't want the Lord to take away your paycheck, right? He's your master. And if you don't want the Lord to take away your paycheck, then you should be loath to take away the paycheck of somebody else because you love them. You see, if you have followers, then you have to treat them the way you want God to treat you because he's your master. SAS is a software company, and they've been in business since 1976, and they love their employees. The CEO, his name is Jim Goodnight, and he says, "Our people are our biggest asset. We have these great employees who are very creative, very, very clever people, and we don't want to lose them." So back, you know, when we had a hard time in 2007 and everybody's cutting back and everybody's laying off, Jim Goodnight said, "There will be no layoffs here at SAS. It is acceptable to me to make slightly less profit in order to keep our people." See, that's not cold capitalism. "We're going to keep you. We're going to find a way to keep it going because I don't want anybody to lose their paycheck." See, that's just great. That's not treating somebody as a subordinate and you kick them off to the side because you can. It's loving people, and that's what it means to be a good boss, as Jesus is a good boss to you. Teddy Roosevelt was so good about this. After he was no longer president, he, of course, still knew the people back at the White House. And one day he decided to go back to the White House and visit all of his friends. So he saw Alice, who's a kitchen maid. And in the whole White House staff, kitchen maid was kind of low on the totem pole, right? But he sees Alice, and he asks her, "Do you still make that wonderful cornbread?" And she says, "Well, she does sometimes make it for the other White House staffers, but she said nobody upstairs, you know, the president and his family, they don't want it." And he says, "Well, they show bad taste, and I'll tell the president when I see him." Well, she brought him a piece of cornbread, and he was walking across the White House property, and as he was going, he was greeting the gardeners and the laborers as he passed. And it says, you know, he addressed each of them so kindly. And Ike Hoover, excuse me, who'd been the head usher, you know, pretty important guy, at the White House for more than 40 years, actually 42 years, he talked about that day with tears in his eyes. And he said, "It was the only happy day we had in nearly 2 years, and not one of us would exchange it for a $100 bill." Here's the former president complimenting, greeting, just being with people like, "Yeah, I'm the former president and you were staff, but it makes no difference. We all love each other." And that's how it's supposed to be. One more Teddy Roosevelt story. This comes from James Amos. He was an African-American bodyguard to the president. He was an FBI agent, and he loved the president. He wrote a book called Hero to His Valet. A valet is a personal assistant. And the saying is, in case you don't know, no man is a hero to his valet. This is not because the man is not a hero, but because the valet is a valet. In other words, servants don't appreciate greatness when they're around it. But James Amos said, "He was my hero. I was his valet. I was his personal assistant, and he was my hero." So that's really saying something. So he called his book Hero to His Valet. And he says, "My wife one time asked the president about a Bob White. Sometime later, the telephone at our cottage rang. at Oyster Point, there was a Roosevelt estate, and James lived on the estate in a cottage, as near neighbors, you might say. So my wife one time asked the president about a Bob White, and sometime later the telephone at our cottage rang. It was Mr. Roosevelt himself. He called to tell her that there was a Bob White outside her window, and that if she would look out, she might just see it. And little things like that were so characteristic of him. Whenever he went by our cottage, even though we were out of sight, we would hear him call out, "Oh, Annie, oh, James." It was just a friendly greeting as he passed by. See, well, yeah, I'm president and you're my valet, but it makes no difference. I mean, I love you and I just want you to be happy, and I'm doing what I can to make you happy. You matter to me. So you see, it's the divine angle that makes all of this so special. So here's conclusion number one. Doing a good job for your human leader, even if it's a drudgery job, it is still extremely important and rewarding because you're actually doing it for the greatest celebrity in the universe, God. One who is famous for giving favors to those who do a good job for him. So be a great worker. Whatever is your work, be a great worker. Now, if you're a boss, here's conclusion two. To stress out a well-meaning assistant or treat him as less important than yourself is to forget that you also have a boss in heaven who thinks of your assistant as his own personal friend or his own personal relative, and who will either reward you or curtail your benefits according to how you treat that assistant. So treat your assistants well. Be a good boss. These are the two surprises. It matters what your day-to-day work is because there's a divine angle. And the Lord is watching. And ultimately, you're doing it for Him. So be a good one at whatever it is you do. Let's pray. Lord, I ask that you'll help us to be good followers and good supervisors. Help us to do our tasks each day in a way that we think would bring you maximum pleasure. And if we've been a little out of line in one thing or another, I pray that beginning right now, we get that right. And we pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.